coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. It was the BMW Championship at a new venue, and my recent picks are driving like a BMW. I hit another winner. We talk about that and recap everything going on in the world of golf. Plus, outside of sports, we're tuned into clickbait and a rewatch for Michael as well. Plus, the first tailgate tour stop this weekend. Football season is here. And this week's guest, we have a twofer. We first have Darren Tang, professional bowler in front of the show, fresh off of a big money win. And we've also got Brooks Austin for a college football preview to get you all caught up for everything that gets going this weekend. Plus, we always end with food. And all of it is brought to you by our friends at City Bonfires. Michael, Labor Day weekend. Here we are. Mm-hmm. Summer's winding down, heading into those fall months. I think it might be kind of, you know, fire pit outdoor vibe season. Wouldn't you say so?
I would have to agree, and that, of course, means s'mores.
That's right, yeah, and the easiest, quickest way to do s'mores outside is with one of these City Bonfires. We talk about it every week because it is the real deal. It's an awesome, portable, reusable bonfire. It's nice and safe and easy to take around. It's easy to light, stick lighter, easy to put out. Put it in your beach bag, backpack, anywhere. It's super easy to take around, and it adds fun and festivity to pretty much any occasion. So check them out, citybonfires.com. Our promo code is COL Fire, again, COL Fire, to save 10% off any order on their website, citybonfires.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. Alex, we've said it every single week, I feel like, this entire golf season. It is the year of the playoff. We said it last week, we said it the week before. It the week before that. We had a six-hole playoff to finish the BMW Championship at Caves Valley in the Owings Mill, Maryland area there. And Patrick Cantlay defeats the new least favorite golfer in the world. There you go. He's now number one in the FedEx Cup, rolling into the playoffs at Eastlake this coming weekend.
Yeah, huge, huge week and great timing for Cantlay, who pretty much locks up his Ryder Cup spot, too. The other crucial thing that happened when he needed it the most. So shout out to him for getting that done. And it was a very impressive performance. I am proud to say, like I said at the top, I got another winner under my belt, a 25-1 winner picking Cantlay on Twitter. My picks are weekly at Course Life 1, and you're at MWRNC. But I'm getting hot now. That's two winners in the last 3 weeks, and Cantlay really surged when he needed to. He kept fending off charges from Bryson, even so in sudden death, making birdie when he needed to keep the playoff rolling. I mean, just really impressive, gutsy stuff. And for those golf fans, Mike, if you're attending a PGA Tour event these days, you can't be looking to leave early on like the 15th or 16th when you think you know who's won, because everything takes sudden death these days.
I mean, this was such a shootout down the stretch. And of course, Cantlay went into the water on 17, but Bryson couldn't make par on 17. Yeah. And then Patrick makes birdie on 18 to force the playoff. And then they just go back and forth through 17 and 18. And just Cantley's putting was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
The whole way through.
He's rock solid. And that's just the kind of personality and vibe he gives off, is just very steady Eddie, undeterred, not bothered by anything else around him. That, honestly, that's kind of what I want to see if I am thinking ahead a few weeks to the Ryder Cup. I want a guy like that who's going to be just kind of very unfettered and hopefully not bothered by the scene and the majesty of it all. So I'm looking for that poise, and Cantlay kind of has been exuding that recently. And he's definitely heading into the driver's seat, heading into the $15 million grab coming up next week.
It's pretty incredible. I have to say, though, my favorite moment out of this tournament, though, was I think it was the last playoff hole. Bryson was standing over his ball and he backs off and tells Patrick to stop walking. Right?
I caught this. Yes. You're loving picking out these little moments right now. I can see the DeChambeau hate has really twisted and taken kind of like a right turn lately, because it's just all these little things seem to be adding up for people like yourself and a lot of people out there, just kind of growing frustration with everything and his attitude recently.
I don't think Bryson is having a good time out there on the course. It's pretty clear to me that he's unhappy in every way. And I think the only thing that could make him happy is if he left the game, and I'd be perfectly fine with that.
You see, he just goes such in and out waves emotionally with how he treats and likes mm-hmm. the game right now. It's like, you know, one moment he's fist pumping, the next moment he's just like the most stuck up golfer you could possibly imagine playing with. It's strange times yeah. riding the Bryson roller coaster for sure. One other moment I need to shout out from this week, because I know you saw a clip of it on Twitter, as everyone did on social media, was there was an amazing meltdown from Patton Kizzire. And it was kind of in three parts, Mike. First, part one being, you know, he had a horrible putt scenario as his season's coming to an end here. And he tried to do the thing where you toss the ball up in the air and smack it with your putter and like hit it a mile. He kind of completely whiffed. The ball went sideways. Then he decided in part two to break the putter over his knees. That worked successfully. And then part three, he actually took his hat off and just started ripping it at the seams and quite literally taking it apart thread by thread as he walked away from the green. An all-time moment and meltdown that needed to be shouted out.
I mean, you do what you got to do to let out your anger. It's okay.
It was all caught on camera. Again, you can follow on Twitter. I'm at CourseOfLife1 and you're MWRNZ. We're always tweeting out these random little nuggets from the world of golf as well, too. It's not just the tournament, Mike, and the result. It's all the random meltdowns that make us feel humane as well, too, as we watch the world's best each week.
Yeah, you know, I may not be able to shoot a 60. I may not be able to, you know, finish a tournament at 27 under par. Yes. But I definitely could attempt to break my putter over my knee and probably fail. So
this is a great transition to a place where I see just a lot less worry on the golf course. We had amazing scenes. I'm not even talking about the golf. I'm just talking about the backdrop and the views on the European Tour this past weekend, Mike. I'm going to tell you to do a little quick Google. I think you searched it ahead of time, but they are out in Switzerland playing the Omega European Masters. Everyone check out Crans Sur Sierre. That's C-R-A-N-S. Sur Sierre Golf Club, where they were playing last week. Mike, if you could possibly just describe how epic this mountainside setting was for where the Euro Tour was, I'd love to see you put it in a few words, because the camera work didn't do it justice this past weekend.
You remember that scene in The Sound of Music where they're singing on top of the mountains and they're surrounded by the mountains?
Yes, what an idyllic film reference that is.
That's what this is. This is, if I ever play golf here, I might die on the 18th green. And just the beauty of it all.
It is. It's amazing. It was a cool backdrop. So check it out if you hadn't. It's Crans Montana in Switzerland specifically where they play. Usually tournament that Matt Fitzpatrick, I think, has won a time or two, but he wasn't there the past week. But a guy that you and I now know very well over the past year or two, I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is the best youngest golfer in the world that nobody knows. It's 20-year-old. You remember him when he was 19, 20-year-old Rasmus Højgaard getting his third win on the European Tour. Mike, he's under 21 years old. He's won three times in the European Tour. I believe in the top 70, 80-ish in the world ranking, just going super under the radar right now.
You know, I'm just continually reminded of how horrible a golfer I am.
No, so these guys, they're so young too. It's the age that really gets me.
Those young whippersnappers.
Well, there's so many 20 somethings right now on this side of the pond, but you forget over there, there's young talent that's coming from all over the place. So watch out for Rasmus Højgaard. He got win number three. And then the other fun note I wanted to point out too, I know you're a big look ahead guy. We've got the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits coming up in a few weeks. Yes. Next week's Italian Open. They're playing in a new venue. There's going to be a lot of guys over there playing there, because that's actually where the 2023 Ryder Cup is going to be held. So that's your first look at that upcoming Ryder Cup venue at the Italian Open. I'm imagining there's going to be some wonderful views there as well, just like every week on the European Tour.
I would expect nothing less.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk about this weekend's FedEx Cup Championship at Eastlake Boring, old Eastlake in Atlanta.
I do get that kind of vibe too. It's like, it's nothing against the enormity of this event. I totally get that 15 million's on the line. I'm here to watch that and excited for it. But yeah, there is something about the course itself. We said this last week. We're wondering when the FedEx Cup might venture out to other venues for the Tour Championship. They've yet to do that in the history of the tournament. So yeah, there is just something missing about this venue. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, I'd love to see them actually go to a major championship caliber venue. If you want this to be a $15 million event, then it in essence is a major. So let's put it at a venue that's going to host a major.
Definitely. Yeah, that is a good thought to consider. And I know I need you to help me out with this week because we're heading into the big money grab. I'm going to shout out the first T and their 9 core values, one of them being confidence. They're basically kind of ranking confidence on the leaderboard. The way we're heading into this $15 million finale is essentially we've already got players at a certain score based on how well they've done, not only all season, but in the last two FedEx Cup playoff events. So where do things stand as we head into the finale here?
That's right. So they all get their rankings. So that means we get a ranked start. So they all start at a certain stroke. So there's already a leaderboard up there. And the leader at 10 under is Patrick Cantlay. He hasn't even hit his golf ball yet. And he's a 10 under par. He's, you know, more than a third of the way to his score this past weekend.
I love that. It's one of my favorite things you say all year on this podcast is when you're here on Tuesday saying, yep, and we've got a leader 10 under par on Tuesday. Yep. That's great. You only get to say that once a year.
That's true. And then he's followed by Tony Finau at 8 under, Beefy Bryson, Please Stop Walking Patrick, DeChambeau is at 7 under par.
Yes.
John, always number 2 or 3 on the leaderboard, Rahm is at 6 under.
Yeah.
Cam, business in the front, party in the back, Smith at 5 under par. And then you got a whole bunch of guys going anywhere from 4 under to even par.
Nice job riffing the nicknames, though. Yeah. I appreciate you doing that on the fly. Good work there. You're definitely tuned in to who's hot right now in the world of golf. Yeah. And those are all the names that we've discussed in the last month. So in fairness to whatever we may think about the format and with this tilted scoring starting on Thursday morning, all those guys you mentioned at the top are the guys who have been playing the best right now. So it is fairly putting them right where they deserve to be at the top leaderboard to start things off.
And here's what this really means is that when we go out to make our picks, we can't look at this and say, hey, you know, this is, you know, 30 best golfers of the season that are left. Anyone here really has a chance. You could put money on DJ. You could put money on Sergio or Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed's starting at even par. He's already 10 strokes back. If he has the best round of his life over this weekend, he still is probably not going to win. So don't put money on Patrick Reed.
Probably like 200 to 1 odds to win. Yeah. Maybe if I had to guess for Patrick Reed, I'm guessing Cantlay is probably maybe what? 2 to 1 odds, maybe even money to bet on Patrick Cantlay to win with a 2-shot lead the way he's been playing. And Bryson's probably even money to win, honestly, sitting where he is. So it's going to be an interesting look at betting. Yeah, again, check us out on Twitter. You're at MWRINC. I'm at Course of Life. One Wednesday night, we'll get out our picks. They'll look a little funny from the odds perspective. I don't know if I'm going to put money on 6 or 7 guys since we've got such a small field. So we'll see how it all lays out. But I'm hot right now. So we'll see if I can get a third win in 4 weeks.
We'll see what happens, and we'll put up our picks on Wednesday, as you said, and we'll go over all of it next week with someone raking in $15 million.
Yes.
And we'll see how it goes. But for now, let's switch over to Tuned In, share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. For me this week, I have to say I'm revisiting a show because season 3 of probably one of my favorite shows on TV right now, What We Do in the Shadows, comes out on Thursday. That means it's time to catch up on seasons 1 and 2, remind myself of everything that happens. If you haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, I've talked about this show before in this podcast. You have to. It's based on the movie What We Do in the Shadows, which was done by Taika Waititi, who everyone now knows from Marvel, back before he was a big deal, about three vampires. The show is about three vampires, really four, actually, in the TV show, sharing a house in Staten Island.
Oh, nice. New York City living. Okay, cool.
It's a mockumentary style. It's hilarious. It's probably one of the funniest shows on TV right now, so you have to watch.
And casually, they're vampires. You didn't glaze over that part as well.
Yeah, too. And they're vampires. So, three are regular vampires. One is a energy vampire, someone who just bores you to death.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
You know one out there. Yes. Everyone knows an energy vampire.
I do. I played with one last Saturday on the golf course.
I'm sorry.
So slow, Mike. I'll get into that later. That's a whole other thing. But I'm tuned into my guy, Vinny Chase from Entourage. Mike, did you ever watch Entourage back in the day?
No, I never got HBO until
so Vinny Chase, aka Adrian Grenier, kind of resurfaced now with a new show. It's called Clickbait. Very interesting concept, kind of based in the weird, deep, dark corners of the internet where like strange things happen and like crimes happen and investigations occur. That's all I'll really say right there. But it's an interesting look at kind of the state of the internet and what going viral means, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. So it's an interesting watch on Netflix. Check out Clickbait. That's what I'm tuned into this week.
That's interesting. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, one episode at a time. I'm not fully committed, so I'll report back in a few weeks.
All right, we'll see how it goes.
Yes.
Let's get into this week's guest, our first guest on the podcast for this week. And we're going back. We want to talk to someone who's had great success since being our podcast. There's a theme with this, if you haven't noticed yet. If you come on our podcast, great things seem to follow for you. And so this week, we decided to bring back on to talk about his success, Pro Bowler Darren Tang.
Yeah, a couple of big money wins, which he'll get into. We'll break down how it all happened and everything like that. Not only is Darren a great professional bowler, he got to a great milestone, which we break down coming up. He's also a golfer as well. So we get an update on him and his friends we've had on the show as well recently.
That's right. And we'll get to that conversation with Darren in just a moment. But first, as always, this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to DesertFoxGolf.com to get your Phone Caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at DesertFoxGolf.com.
Next up, we've got a past guest of Course of Life who is now just a 2 times over winner, won double, not only his first national PBA Tour title in Ohio, but the Summer Points champion as well, too. Here to break it down, the 2021 BowlerStore.com champion and Summer Series points winner, Darren Tang, joining the Course of Life. Darren, is it overjoy? Is it relief, excitement? How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I think a lot of it could be relief. Winning that first title definitely takes a big weight off your shoulders. But yeah, I feel great. I don't think it's really set in yet, and I don't think it will until I have some time to just kind of sit back and think about it.
Love it. And when we last talked in February or January of this year, you mentioned that was a goal in 2021. So you checked that one off, getting that first national title. So congrats on that. Let's talk about the run that you had. First off, as soon as I heard this happened in Coldwater, Ohio, that is like a classic, like Midwest bowling town name, if there ever was one. I know there's a lot of history behind this event as well, too. And you complimented how well run it is. Just talk about that event specifically and kind of the vibes you had going in.
Yeah, the Hardings do a great job. They really take care of the players. They feed us. They have, it's kind of like an entertainment center, a lot of mini golf, actually. And that's what a lot of the PBA players like to spend their time doing when they're not bowling. So it's a lot of fun.
Nice. But I bet that the got conditions are usually on the mini golf course too.
Oh yeah, always. We played like 4 or 5 rounds. But yeah, they're always really tough there, and people go in expecting the scores to be really low. Definitely a lot of frustration amongst the players. So it's really about who can manage those frustrations the best.
Nice. You definitely did the best job, obviously, coming out on top. And as soon as I saw you got the victory, I immediately knew. For those who don't know, Darren has an amazing YouTube channel where he vlogs his entire experience as a pro bowler. I knew that I was going to get excited to watch the vlog of the win, which everyone should check out. I'm guessing kind of going through the clips and maybe editing that back was a fun trip versus all the other vlogs you've done over the past several months, correct?
Yeah, so I actually have an editor, so I send all the clips to him after I'm done. So for a little bit, I was doing some of the editing. He was doing some of the editing.
But I remember
he
figured, that, yeah.
He said, so you could focus more on bowling and competing. Just send all the clips to me over the weekends, and I'll take care of it. So I actually had no idea how the vlog was going to end up. And, towards the end, I actually got a little emotional watching it, so that was pretty cool.
Very neat. Yeah, obviously, let's talk about the marathon that you had to go through to get to where you did for that victory. It's crazy how many games you bowl, and we've talked about the Ironman mentality of making it through these tournaments all week and still having your best form when you need it, you know, when it's showtime. Just talk about your form headed into that week. Had you been doing anything specifically with your game, or where were you at in the headspace, you know, to bowl that the marathon week to get to the title?
Yeah, biggest part was probably the headspace, like you mentioned. The mental game was huge. Physically, I figure, you know, I'm always going to be working on that. It's going to improve at the rate it's going to improve. But you can make the biggest impact on your results mentally, I feel. So the entire summer swing, I just keyed in on that. I said, no matter what happens, just make sure you're good mentally. And then the physical will hopefully take care of itself. I started off the swing really well. I finished 7th at the first event. We had a doubles event after that, finished 13th. And then back-to-back weeks, we had really difficult conditions. I actually finished 25th in the first one. And I really didn't bowl too bad. Scores were super close. I was probably like 10 pins off of the top 18. So it was really tight there. And going into cold water, I really didn't have a lot of expectations. They have a term called getting cold watered, which, you know, just weird things happen in that place. So I was kind of just expecting that to happen the whole time. But at no point did I really get cold watered. I think my low game for the event was 191, which was kind of mind blowing to me because, you know, I've had a block there where I bowled a couple of 260s, but in the same block, I bowled 120. So in that sense, you know, you just kind of walk in there and just hope for the best. And I got pretty lucky.
Nice. Yeah, I love that cold water. Yeah, just trying to avoid that dud game, obviously. We're all trying to do that in every aspect of bowling, and especially you are at the highest level. In terms of your energy from a physical perspective, we talked about this the last time around. Do you try and kind of like keep some in the tank and preserve energy as we get through the marathon of the weekend? Or are we going all out from start to finish and adding them up later? What's your kind of your thought process on energy level during the course of the week?
Yeah, growing up, my dad was really big on efficiency. Just no matter what you did, be efficient. And, you know, growing up, watching bowling, you see all these really exciting moments on TV. You know, players slapping it out, getting loud, and all that stuff. So, you know, we all go through that phase where we want to be like that. We do that. We try to emulate it. But at this point in my career, I try not to waste any energy doing anything unnecessary. So if I get a bad break, you know, kind of just shake it off. You know, something good happens. I walk back just like any other shot. So I think that is a big key for myself, just being able to stay in the same headspace, keeping things consistent, because our game's about repetition. So I want to be in the same space mentally. I want to make the same shots, repeat the same thing every time. So I really try to stay as level as possible at all times.
Very neat. And you did that throughout the week and got yourself to the show itself, the final five being the stepladder format. So basically you qualified as the number one seed in that stepladder format for the top five. I'm curious, once you figured out you're being the number one seed, obviously meant you were in great form, but it also does come with that moment where you do have to do some waiting around and watch the rest of the stepladder happen to see who you're going to face. How do you confront that, and what did you end up doing during the wait?
Yeah, I did something a little different this time. Usually I'm pretty... I try to get super focused. I try to take it super serious. This time I just told myself to enjoy the moment, because it's a 50-50 toss up. At this point, guys are making the shows. They're bowling really well. And anything can happen in a one game match. So I said, make 10 good shots, enjoy the moment, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, good mentality indeed. I definitely, my nerves perked up when I saw that it was going to be you against Kyle Troop, aka the pro of the fro, to get yourself to the championship. Now, I know him. He's had not only a near record season on the PBA Tour, but he's a closer as well, too. What were the thoughts like heading into that final matchup against Troop?
Yeah, this is always an interesting question. And most people don't like my answer, because I try to look at all of my opponents the same way. Or better yet, I try not to look at my opponents at all. I just try to focus on what I'm doing, because bowling is not a defensive game in a sense. So the more you can focus on what you're doing and less on what your opponents are doing and who they are, I think the better you're going to perform.
Yeah, it definitely paid off, and you were very poised, and it was not only a win against Troop to get that championship, it was a commanding one too. You even got to have a nice moment in the 9th frame. That's always nice when it doesn't get to the 10th frame, but I'm curious what that moment was like when you did get the win in the 9th frame. You sort of looked up. I could see the relief in your eyes. Tell me who you thought of first in that moment when you officially sealed the victory.
Yeah, it was mom and dad, definitely, because none of this happens without them. They've supported what we wanted to do for forever. I mean, since we were little, and I said, whatever you do, commit to it, be great at it. And yeah, it was funny going into the 10th frame. I could barely finish because, you know, I got a little emotional. My eyes kind of filled up with some tears. But luckily I was able to hold back and not make myself look like too much of a fool in the 10th.
Yes. I always wondered what that moment was like. It's a good awkward spot to be in when you're maybe crying your eyes out, but you got the victory secured in the 10th frame. So congrats again on that win in Coldwater. It was very special. Again, Darren Tang here at PBA Tour, vitamin_DTang on Instagram. Check out the YouTube channel as well. I noticed that you've done a great job having some fans and friends help document for you on the vlogs that I've been watching as well. I saw a guy named D-Rod who was there for you in Coldwater. I just wanted to shout him out because it seemed like he was some sort of lucky charm for you. Explain how you guys got in contact.
Yeah, I actually have a community on Discord. For those that don't know, it's a gaming platform for communication.
Nice. Yeah.
So through streaming on Twitch, YouTube, everything's intertwined. It's linked. You can find any platform through just one of them. So Discord is a space where everyone can hang out, just talk to each other on a daily basis. I occasionally pop my head in, have some conversations with the community, and you know, through Twitch is where we really get to know each other because I could talk to them live. But Discord is more or less the same thing as a big group chat. So I get to know a lot of the people through there. And when they see an event near them and they come out, they're more than willing to help me vlog. And I really can't do it without them. So yeah, shout out to them. I really appreciate them. And yeah, I hope this thing just keeps growing.
It has, man. The last time we talked, I think you were maybe 9 or 10K subs and you're over 22 right now. So definitely getting a lot more visibility and the audience is growing. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Texas when the tour comes that way as well, too. A couple other mutual friends of ours that we know I saw were out there, too. Marshall Kent, Lindsay Hoskins. They got to play some golf in Ohio. Did you hit up the course at all there? I know you just played a round recently this week after celebrating, but how much golf have you got in recently?
Oh, yeah. Coldwater, there's usually a golf tournament. So we play a scramble and, you know, they have all kinds of prizes, close to the pin, longest drive. They do some raffles afterwards. Unfortunately, my team wasn't the best. I had one kid that had never golfed before.
Oh, geez.
Another kid that's been playing for 4 months. And then the guy in my cart, I was probably a good somewhere between 10 and 15 strokes better than him. So we did not fare too well.
Love that. At least you got the chance to get on the course and kind of decompress for a bit there. And I saw your brother Mikey, too, taking some swings on your Instagram. I'm curious, what's the status of his game? Because he was taking a pretty big rip at the range when you were working on his swing. How's everything going with him?
Oh, yeah, we were at Topgolf. We were just messing around. But my brother's pretty good. He's been golfing. He played high school golf. He's been playing since he was pretty young. I think we started at the same time, but I took a large chunk of my life off of golf. I had a hard time handling my dad with more than one sport, so I chose bowling. Yeah, bad choice there, I think. But who knows where the golf would have gone. He's probably close to a 9 or a 10 handicap right now, I think.
Okay. All right.
So nice. When he was playing, he doesn't play very often. I mean, being in Ohio, the weather kind of restricts him from playing as much as he'd like. But I think at his peak, he was probably close to a 6.
Good stuff. Good checking in on him and the Tang brothers as well, too. Getting it done on the PBA tour now. Like I said earlier, you not only got the win in Coldwater, but then the next week you officially wrapped up the win for the summer points list as well, too. Another 20K in the account, which is always nice. However, I do know you said at the end of the blog that you're going to be buying some dinners after that 20K victory. Did your friends go hard on you with the order? What was it, surf and turf and champagne, or did they go modest on you with their dinner order?
Yeah, we actually haven't had a whole lot of time to celebrate because the second everything wrapped up with the bowling, we had to get on the road. We had a 9-hour drive back to Ohio. And then the next morning, we had to drive here to Chicago. And then tomorrow, we're going to be driving to Minnesota. So I don't think we're going to be doing a whole lot of celebrating until I get home to Vegas.
Nice. It's going to be a Vegas meal then. You're dodging it for now, but they'll get you eventually once.
I'm expecting there to be. Yeah, we're spending a lot of money on food when I get back.
Good stuff. Well, enjoy the victory meal. Hopefully you get another round, maybe at Cascada in your near future as well. Tell everyone on the team I said hi. And again, congrats. It's Darren Tang hopping on the course of life and look forward to connecting with you after the next victory. Sound good?
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Hey,
And we're back. Great chat there with Darren Tang. Love to hear how big these big wins are for these guys. Nothing goes to their heads, which I think is just fantastic.
We have a lot of these kind of career grinders on our podcast in any sport, really, golf or not. And it's cool to watch them eclipse these mountains. We brought him on in early 2021. He said a goal of his was to get that first national title. Not only does he get it, it helped him lock up the summer points win. So he gets 10K for the win, 20K for the points. And those are things that are just enormous for the future of his career. Looking forward to having him on again. Hey, next win, right? Let's just start piling up the wins and having Darren back on as regular guest. It was great having him. I love watching his vlogs on YouTube as well, too. Check out his YouTube channel, and then also check out ours as well, Course Life Podcast, where you can listen to full episodes and check out vlogs from my golfing experiences as well, too.
Yeah, and if you don't follow us on YouTube, you should. You should also make sure you follow us on Instagram. We're at COL Podcast. Alex is on Instagram at Course of Life Alex. I'm there at MWRINC as well. And we're on Twitter. You're at Course of Life 1. I'm at MWRINC. I like how I have the same handle for everything and you don't.
I tried so hard. I actually should think, I should actually revisit just trying those all again, because it's been a while since I've done that. That's one of those things where, like, I could start trying Course of Life 1 again. It might just be available. Who knows? Or some hungry listener might just scarf it up right now as they're hearing this. That's a possibility too, right?
You never know. And then they're going to try to sell it to you for, you know.
Yes, they're going to hold it for ransom. That's a thing.
$10.
That is a thing out there. You think that's a joke. It's not. That's a real thing that happens on the internet.
It's true. Yes. It's true. Before we talk football, let's talk a little baseball, because I just want to preach my Yankees going 12 wins straight. Just one of the best teams in baseball now.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Yankees. I mean, we buried them about three or four times in the spring.
All that matters is who makes it into the postseason. And, you know, right now your Red Sox are holding on to a wild card spot, just barely. So,
clinging on to that second wild card spot, exactly where everyone wants to be, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. My, how the turns have tabled, to quote The Office as well. So an interesting set of events there in the AL East, but congrats. You're running away with things.
Yeah. Thank you. What we're not running away with is anything in football for my New York Football Giants, because as we got to see yesterday when the Giants played your Patriots.
We got a look.
Not a lot of change between this season and last season.
I said before we hopped on, it's impressive how quickly Daniel Jones has flatlined any sort of potential as an NFL quarterback. It's like nothing has changed for him in the last 8 months in the limited look I got early against the Patriots defense. But as far as the Mac versus Cam update, Mac looked good again. Like, there's still no official verdict as to whether Cam Newton is the starter. Belichick has said it in the past. It feels like Cam Newton's the starter, but like, if you just look at the film, it's like completely a coin flip as to who could start the season for the Patriots. We might find the answer by the end of this week, but nonetheless, it remains a bit of a mystery as we put the wraps on preseason for a lot of teams.
Do you think there's a potential that the Patriots could go with a two quarterback system?
You know what? Boston Sports Talk Radio is crazy enough that we've already ventured into that topic a little bit.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah. You'll use Mac Jones and bring Cam Newton in for the goal line. How about that? Yeah. Big tough bruiser running the ball in. So we've already addressed that. So that is not crazy enough to be put past as a nuts thought. So I'll just say it's in play. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I've seen crazier things. Put it at 1%, but it's in play. So that's the Patriots and Giants preseason coming to a wrap. We love talking Hard Knocks real quickly. And really, it has nothing to do with the football on this HBO special following the Dallas Cowboys. Just a couple things I like to talk life with you about. And the first is regarding the world that I have not ventured into, but I'm going to soon, Mike. My vision is failing me with age. My wife and family remind me of this all the time. I'm going to be some sort of glasses or contact lenses guy. Jaquan Hardy famously had his contact lenses fall out in the middle of a game and he could barely see anything. He said, Michael, what's your history with contact lenses? I know you've always been a glasses guy since I've known you. Where do you stand on contacts?
Yeah, I've worn glasses since first grade, I think it was, and I've never tried contacts. I have no desire to stick a finger in my eyeball. It just kind of grosses me out and something I don't want to do. So I've always been a glasses guy. Plus, you know, you look smart with glasses. So
you do. You do look very smart, very intelligent look indeed. And you're right. They HBO literally did the full zoom of Hardy putting the contact lens in. That's a really gory side angle. If you really get in and see that up close, that actual process of putting a contact lens in, a little cringy, not going to lie. So that was a funny note from Hard Knocks. The other one was obviously our pal, Jerry Jones. He is obsessed with himself and Jerry Roll. Those are the two things he loves most in the world. So of course, before his arrival at the final preseason game, the most recent one, he had to take a full lap in the helicopter around his building. And it was basically just so he could point out little intricacies of the building process of his massive Jerry World Stadium. He is vaccinated. He made that very public on last week's episode. And his famous joke, Mike, which I know you'll appreciate, is he says he's got more shots in him than a Cocker Spaniel when they asked about his vaccination status. So Jerry Jones indeed living his best life as the owner at age a million or however old he is.
You know, I don't think he's ever going to die. I don't think so.
I really don't. Listen, like, the skin is turning a little bit more frail year by year as we see him, but he's still got the energy. He's at all the games. He's still standing up and watching and having a good time. So whatever you think of the guy, shout out to Jerry Jones for just being a boss billionaire and loving life at Jerry World. That was the wrap on this week's Hard Knocks on the pro side of football.
Yeah, and that means college football season is also starting, and it means you get to start your Texas tailgate tour. Yes, this weekend I as do. Well.
I'm pumped. A little breaking news update for you and the world as well, too. Thank you to our good friends at the Texas State Athletic Department. I think they're going to help us get some media credentials for this Saturday's visit. How about that, Michael?
There you go.
We're coming up in the world one step at a time. So we're going to check out the tailgate action and everything from game day at Bobcat Stadium. It's the Texas State Bobcats hosting the Baylor Bears. Mike, this is a big deal for a small school like Texas State to host a Big 12 foe that's just down the road, about an hour and a half up in Waco. So a good little interstate matchup, and just excited to be back in with the college football faithful as we get the season going.
And of course, as college football season is here, that means we need to turn to our college football expert, Brooks Austin.
Yes, absolutely. That's our guy. We've had him on since, I think it's spring 2019, Mike. Isn't that nuts? Going past 2 years now with Brooks Austin, you've been on a few times. Maybe the most frequent visitor to the Course of Life. So it's great to have him on again to set the stage for this season.
That's right. So I'm going to take a step back and let you and Brooks talk about college football here. And, let's see what we think this season holds for us.
Next up, we have our friend of the show joining us. He's the film guy. He's in the trenches covering all things UGA football in the SEC. From Georgia, now we got Brooks Austin joining the Course of Life. Brooks, how's everything going today?
I'm doing well, Alex. How are you, brother?
Great. I mean, it's football season. I just noticed as well, too, that because of our transition with the Morning Read being captured by SI, we're officially coworkers now. So we're both part of the Sports Illustrated Network. So we basically sit down the hall from each other virtually. But it's great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it's always good to be on here, Alex. I think you're one of the first podcasts I ever did probably 2 or 3 years ago before I was even on with Sports Illustrated. I think I was just another guy, on the social media platform, and now here we are a couple years later, and things have changed just a little bit since the first appearance on.
That's what I wanted to check on, man. Yeah, I saw that there's a couple more zeros next to the people who are following you on Twitter at Brooks Austin SI, correct? Tell me about just kind of how things have evolved, because I've always known you as the college football guy. You know, you watched a ton of college football forever. Tell me about kind of the film guy evolution, though, and how the film content has kind of really catapulted you to a different audience recently.
Yeah, so I mean, the one thing I learned in this industry, right, is when you start doing something that people like and you see it's got a stickiness about it, you don't venture away from that. You don't veer away from it. You steer into the skid, if anything. So I noticed that the stuff that I was doing on social media that was film oriented and was educational in terms of the game of football, people really liked. They were really grabbing onto it. They really wanted more of it, and they were clamoring for it. So. As I said, I steered into the skid, really kind of rebranded myself, if you will, as the guy that knows football, the guy that breaks down football film, the film guy, if you will. So, really, really pounded that avenue. And it's been, fortuitous for us in terms of growing that platform and growing that social media aspect of what it is that I do. on top of all the other stuff that I do, on top of the writing, on top of the camera work, on top of the microphone work, just everything, man. It's all encompassing and all helps one another, right? The stuff that I do on film, you know, lends itself towards the writings that we have over on Dogs Daily. The stuff I do over on Dogs Daily, you know, helps back in terms of promotion for the YouTube aspect and the stuff we do on film. So it all helps one another, but it's all very, very important to what it is that we do over on dogsdaily.com and on YouTube and on Patreon.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a full circle follow when you're involved in the Brooks Austin world, especially as we get towards football season. Now we've got the streams, you're behind the camera in front of it, the whole nine yards. Tell me a little bit about the recruiting circuit, which I noticed you've been a much bigger part of as well too recently. I noticed that you've done a really cool thing because of how intimidating that whole process is, especially now in the technology age and the way kind of recruits are brought into schools. You've become a lot more of what I noticed like an ally to these recruits instead of sort of an adversary. Just explain kind of how like rigorous and intense high school football recruiting is now and kind of what you're setting out to do from your end.
Yeah, for me, like as a former player, I see enough of these kids where people just walk up and they ask for interviews. They ask for information on their recruitment. They ask for this, they ask for that. And I noticed very early on that no one was really providing anything for these kids. They're just there to kind of grab whatever they can from them and then leave. Where I set out and told myself, like, hey, when I show up, I'm going to learn to be the best photographer I can. I'm going to figure out however I can provide a way to build on their own brand, right? I don't have to worry about mine. I'm there to enhance theirs. So I'll use mine to help enhance their brand and help build their name and type of stuff like that. And then I started thinking, well, you know, photos aren't just enough. So I went out and found a bunch of great, really great videographers, had them with me and brought them on and you know, paid for them to go to these high school games and take care of these kids on that aspect. Then, you know, as I do my film stuff, well, kids want to know what I think about their high school film. So they'll start sending me that kind of stuff, starting evaluating those things. So it's full encompassing on that aspect too, but it's based in it and it's rooted in my former playing background where, you know, I'll never forget my first byline I ever wrote. It's a former player that will always have the player's perspective first or always try to have the player's perspective first. And I've approached it that way from the recruiting standpoint as well, where I don't just want to be another hanger on when I show up. I don't just want to stick a camera in some kid's face and say, oh, thanks, by the way, you played great tonight, and then walk away. Like, that's just not the way I've gone about doing my business. And I think it's resonated with some of these young men, especially in this area around us here in Georgia.
Definitely. I've appreciated seeing it as well, too. There's cool free content, premium content, and everything in between where you break down the tape. And it's a very neat way to watch the game, which I'll get back to in a little bit. But I want to get to everything we're all excited about, which is obviously college football season returning in its full effect. You know, the full fans back in the stands perspective that we may have been missing in some spots last year. But it's great to have a fantastic opener surrounding the team that you cover the most, the Georgia Bulldogs, opening things up at a neutral site game against Clemson, week one action here. Just give me your first thoughts on this Georgia Bulldogs team as they look ahead to this big spot in week one.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to Zach Lentz, our Clemson writer. Georgia's really, really banged up, man. I mean, they're really banged up. Darnell Washington starting tight end, probably going to be out. Tyke Smith would have been a heavy contributor at the star position, probably going to be out. Warren Erickson starting center, probably going to be out. Obviously, George Pickens, the primary wide receiver, going to be out for some extended time due to the ACL injury he had this spring. Dominic Blaylock tore his ACL last year, this time probably going to be out. So those are five players that are definitely going to be or would have been heavily involved in this football game that aren't going to be available. So that's the initial takeaway. Outside of that, I mean, had both these teams really, I still think it's going to be a coin toss of a football game, but had both these teams been healthy, like Clemson appears to be, I would have probably given the slight edge to Georgia. But the most important thing going into this football game is that Georgia's still got their quarterback upright and healthy. So as long as that's the case, I think they've definitely got a chance, especially with this offense. This offense is going to look, I think, totally different than it even did closing the year out last year. I think they're going to change some things. I think they're going to change how it is they go about playing the game of football as well. So super excited to watch this game and cover it. and definitely do a live stream around it. I think it's probably the most highly anticipated season opener Georgia's had in well over a couple of decades. I mean, probably since 1981 when they opened the season as defending national champions, to be honest with you.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's a powerful way to open, and you want to make a statement early on Saturday, September 4th, you go beat Clemson in a neutral site and you set the tone for the rest of the season. So I'm excited for the game specifically. Now talk to me about the Georgia quarterback situation with JT Daniels. You know, from an outsider perspective and being a casual, you know, covering all college football fan, it seemed like there was a lot of confusion with the Georgia quarterback in the last season or two. JT Daniels kind of brings that California swag. I can tell it seems like they're leaning into him as the starter, but what's your vibe with JT Daniels as we head into this new season?
No, definitely the starter. But I think the thing that stands out to me is just how smart he is as an individual, how analytical he approaches the game, how much of a computer-like aspect he approaches it with. It's very much so taking advantage of opportunities and finding the best, you know, outcome, the best possible outcome for your offense on each individual given play. That all comes from film study. He's a film guy in and of himself. Kirby Smart said that at the SEC Media Day. We had a good chuckle about it because
I know you loved hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah. I made a tweet about how, you know, sorry, he's got to come approach me for that. That name has been trademarked and spoken for. He's a very much a tape grinder. This guy loves football and loves to study the game of football as well. And it definitely shows up on his play on Saturdays as well. So I think that's the main thing, but I think there's also a level of confidence that he provides to his teammates. They definitely believe in this young man. They think that they've got a guy, right? And that in a football locker room, when you know you got a dude playing quarterback, it's just something changes around the chemistry and the makeup of the team. It's hard to quantify. It's hard to explain. It's just something you feel when you've been around it. And this is definitely one of those guys. He brings that aspect of confidence, and it exudes around the rest of the football team and the rest of the locker room there in Athens.
Cool. So we're ganging around JT Daniels this season. I'm looking forward to seeing the season that he can put together for the Bulldogs. And talking in general about the SEC, kind of the general outlook that we see typically is the SEC West is usually Alabama's for the taking, unless LSU has something to say about it. And then obviously Florida, Georgia in the East, very competitive. What does the outlook look like for you from a Georgia perspective? Is this a year where Georgia can grab an SEC championship? How much closer are they to Alabama? You know, how far apart do you see those teams?
Yeah, I think you're splitting hairs when you're looking at those two football teams, especially roster wise. I think the difference there is that, you know, whatever Alabama looks like week one, they're not going to look like week 14 in the SEC championship game because you got a redshirt freshman quarterback in Bryce Young, who is immensely talented. Another California kid, actually, immensely talented. And the fact that Georgia doesn't see them until the SEC championship game or won't see them until the SEC championship game is not necessarily concerning, but it definitely gives Alabama a chance to wind up. People are talking about how, you know, quote unquote, down the SEC East is. I'm not really here for the SEC West this year either. I think all in all, Georgia and Alabama, especially Alabama, obviously have kind of they're on a slightly different plateau and a slightly different level than the rest of the SEC East or the rest of the SEC as a whole. Florida's rebuilding this year. Lost a bunch of offensive production, including a starting quarterback. You can say the same thing at Texas A&M. Kellen Mond, second-round draft pick, but had been that program. I mean, he was the entire program for 4 years, essentially, out there as their starting quarterback. They've got to figure out what it is that they're going to do at the position. So the two guys and two teams, including, like, LSU out there in the West, right? Everyone knows about them. Well, their starting quarterback just took a major hit in Miles Brennan, so – I think he's going to be out for a while as well out there. So they've got a two-headed battle at that quarterback position between, you know, basically a freshman and a redshirt freshman. So they've got to decide what's going on out there at that position as well. Not to mention all the stuff going on outside of the program and off the field out there with all the NCAA investigations and all the stuff going on at LSU right now. I don't expect them to really push Alabama in the SEC West, if I'm being 100% honest. So I think when you look at the SEC as a whole this year, it's still the SEC. Like, you're still going to have to show up every single Saturday, and you're still going to be lining up across from a football team that's loaded roster-wise, because that's the way it is here. These teams in the SEC recruit really, really well, and even if they don't recruit at an upper echelon level, they're still an SEC football program, and they develop talent like they are an SEC football program. So when you look at teams like Kentucky, they're going to give teams a fight. I like what you know, Eli Drinkwitz is doing up there at Missouri as well. I really stand by what he does as a football coach. And I think they're developing into a pretty strong program. Shane Beamer's program in South Carolina is not going to lay down and let anybody just run over them. Now, they might get run over, but they're going to fight. They're going to be fighting you tooth and nail for four quarters as well. So it's a physical football league, but it is a league right now that is pretty top heavy, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's some other conferences where you might be able to sneak by and get some wins half asleep. That's not the case in the SEC for sure. That'll be on full display this fall. Again, we're joined by Brooks Austin, our football guy, resident UGA, and film guy expert, Brooks Austin SI on Twitter. Let's get to a handful of just rapid fire questions here regarding the upcoming college football season. Just give me a classic sleeper under the radar team, maybe inside or outside of the SEC that should be getting a little more attention as we head into the fall.
Yeah, I think I already kind of mentioned one. I think Mark Stoops is an exceptional football coach.
Yeah,
I really do up there at Kentucky. And they've changed some things offensive wise. They got a new starting quarterback up there, actually transferred, I believe, from Penn State last year. He's the one that went viral last week for eating that rotten, well, not rotten banana, but extremely ripe banana.
Oh, yes.
With the peel still on it. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for saying that.
the guy's a downright psycho, apparently. But no, so they've got a new offense and a new offensive identity. They stole a guy from the NFL and brought him back down to the college ranks. And they're going to be an interesting football team to watch for sure. But one thing you know about Kentucky, they're always going to play great defense and they're always going to play hard. So excited to see what they do this football year. Then maybe outside of the SEC, I'll be honest, I spend most 99.9% of my time that is not allotted very well. There's not much free time in the schedule, to be honest with you, Alex. But no, I think if I were to steal one from my buddy Josh Pate over there at 24/7 Sports, he seems to love Iowa State this year. And I know they're a top 10 program with Brock Purdy and all the returners they got. And, you know, they'll go 13 personnel every once in a while. They'll run three tight ends out there and just try to play some bully ball every once in a while too. So
nice.
You got to watch out for them in the Big 12. For sure this year, but that's Oklahoma's conference to lose, it appears, until, you know, they head on over to the SEC.
Yeah, a lot of Iowa State buzz for sure. Definitely here in Big 12 land where I am. And I think maybe just a couple of questions about Spencer Rattler leading that offense too. I see the talent, but I just don't know if he's all world. So we'll find out soon. That's a good transition to my next thought. I always love to ask you quickly about the Longhorns, but it's really a more general question. Texas and Oklahoma, on a potential move to the SEC. When you first heard about this story, just in general, what were your opening like emotional reactions? Mine was kind of mostly shocked that this could actually be moving through. But what were your first thoughts?
Mine was cha-ching, great for business. I mean, holy crap. I mean, to be honest with you, from a selfish perspective, I think the month of June was one of our best months we've had in a long time. You're talking about two national, I mean, known brands. I mean, Texas especially, but even Oklahoma, everyone knows about the Sooners and everybody knows about the Longhorns. So them coming to the SEC, my initial thoughts were, yes, come on. Like, that is excellent for business for my end. But in terms of a football perspective, I don't know how well they'll hold up, especially Texas. I mean, Sark's great. Don't get me wrong. He is a great, great offensive coordinator, and they're doing a better job recruiting than they had under, you know, the previous regime under Herman and even dating back to Charlie Strong. So they're doing a better job in recruiting, but that's what it's going to take. Like, and even Lincoln Riley up there in Oklahoma, right? Great offensive coordinator, great offensive mind, but you're coming into an area of the country where you're going to have to start recruiting really, really well. I'm not talking like top 10 level, like both of these teams have an ability to do. If you want to win this conference, it's proven you've got to be recruiting in that top 5 level on a year in and year out basis. Hell, Georgia's been doing it for 4 years now under Kirby Smart, and they've still got a hurdle to leap over Alabama on the field. So when you come into this conference, there's so much depth from 1 to 14 now, especially with these two teams being added in. That, I mean, we already talked about it. Every Saturday, you got a dogfight on your hands. There is no Kansas State, even though going to Manhattan seems to sneak up on teams every once in a while. But there is no Kansas out here. And people will say, well, you got Vanderbilt. That's one. That is one. There are several in the Big 12 where it seems like it's a given you can roll in, and Oklahoma is going to be a 21-point favorite That's not going to be the case when they come to the SEC. So that's kind of my thought process on that. It is much more of an extenuated grind. You got to grind it out for, you know, 9-10 conference games, and who knows what it's going to look like when they ultimately get here, whenever they get here, and how they reshape the conference and what it ultimately looks like. I don't know. I don't have the answers on that, but my initial thought was, yes, come on. Great.
Cha-ching. Yeah, I love that. Hey, Sark and coaches and assistants, that means hit the road double. However hard you're hitting the road right now, double down on that recruiting, like Brooks Austin said. Taking a look at that UGA schedule, I did a quick scan through. I see the Clemson game. I obviously see the cocktail party against Florida and Jacksonville. Those two, maybe. What's the number three? Is there a number three toughest game on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a toss-up between Kentucky and Missouri. I mean, this schedule this year for Georgia, I mean, I've seen it on social media. There are some season ticket holders that are not exactly happy. But, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, it's not Georgia's fault that you know, Florida's down this year. It's not Georgia's fault that Tennessee seems to be, you know, in the bottom dweller of this conference for the last 5 or 6 years. It's not Georgia's fault that, you know, Jadeveon Clowney and Marcus Lattimore no longer play at South Carolina. It's not their fault. I mean, you have to play who's in front of you. You have to play who's on the schedule. So, and it's definitely not your fault that Auburn's in a rebuild and that's your permanent crossover game. And I believe you get, I can't remember who the other crossover is from the SEC West, but it's nobody to ride home about. But, you know, it's not exactly a murderer's row after you get done with Clemson. But, you know, it is what it is. You play who you play, and you can try to go out and schedule out of conference games. But I mean, Georgia of all programs is the team that's done that over the next like 10 years. I think they play Oklahoma, Ohio State. They go out to another big one. I think they got Oregon on the schedule as well. So they've done their due diligence in terms of scheduling out of conference. Yeah, they've done their due diligence. Like it's not Kirby Smart or the athletic administration's fault that the SEC West is down. But yeah, that schedule is not necessarily a who's who after that Clemson game.
Okay, so there's a good chance the Bulldogs, I'm watching them this year for sure. Final question I wanted to end with, Brooks, because I know not only do I love following your perspective on social media during the season, but the way you watch the game definitely helps inform a lot of us as casual fans that might be watching it from a little bit of more of a 30,000 foot perspective. Talk to fans out there about kind of ways that maybe you watch the game versus the average fan, and how fans can kind of look into a little more detail on the field and watch college football from a different perspective, like the film guy does.
Yeah. Stop watching the ball. That's the only thing I can tell you. Yeah. And like there's some, I had a bunch of our guys on Patreon and a bunch of our guys in Discord ask me to do basically an episode where I kind of walk them through how I watch. I wouldn't advise that. Okay. I'm checking safety rotation. I'm checking like linebacker depth. I'm looking at like where the offensive line's feet are. Like don't, you ain't got to do all that. But if you really want to watch it from a closer advantage point and closer vantage point, instead of just watching the football, because that's what everyone does. Down to Hutt, they watch the quarterback. If he makes a great throw, everyone's like, oh, he's good. And if their wide receiver makes a great catch on the other end, it's, oh, he's great and the corner sucks. Like, if you want to stop doing that, I would pay attention to what's going on at the line of scrimmage. Like, you hear all these coaches in their post-game press conference, they talk about winning the line of scrimmage. We have to do a better job of winning the line of scrimmage. They're not feeding you coach speak. That's football. I mean, if you win that front five matchup, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win the football game. Okay. So if you want to get a little better at watching football, I would first of all, you know, advise maybe subscribe to our Patreon service and check us out on YouTube. But if you want to just watch on Saturdays and try to pay a little bit closer attention to what's actually happening, pay attention to that offensive and defensive line. If you see one group just dominating the other, odds are that football team's going to win. If the defensive line is creating havoc from Clemson on September 4th, well, pay attention to it as the game progresses and watch. And you'll see that they're starting to control the game. Vice versa, if Georgia's offensive line is doing just a reasonable job of handling Clemson's defensive line, that's probably going to play out for 4 quarters. And if it does, you're probably going to see Georgia win that football game. So I think if you really pay attention to it, you'll find Saturday, you know, day in and day out in college football, whoever wins that line of scrimmage matchups, probably going to win the football game.
Love that messaging too. That's kind of a challenge out there to the football fans listening, is try and watch a few plays and just don't follow the football. I dare you to try it. It's a fun experience. And it's the way this week's guest, Brooks Austin, watches the game. He's the film guy. Remind everyone where they can find your content. Obviously, Brooks Austin, SI, but where else can we find Game Day, SEC, and Bulldogs content?
Yeah, so I do a pretty good job of trying to streamline it for the audience. I mean, if you're not on Twitter, if you're a YouTube guy, or if you're a podcast guy or gal, we do have a podcast network. It's the Film Guy Network on any podcast, however, wherever you find it. But on YouTube, you can just search Brooks Austin over there on YouTube. We'll pop up. We'll do a live stream every game day for those. We might do a dry run here soon on that. I don't know. I got to talk to my producer when he's available and see what's going on there. But no, we'll be doing a live stream every Saturday for every Georgia game. If you want to learn, you know, what's going on during the game, what's actually happening, we'll be there over on YouTube. So no, I appreciate you for having me, Alex. And, you know, I got to find some time to get back on the golf course. I'm going to tell you what, I don't know if you got kids, Alex, but as soon as you do, them clubs go up for a while.
Yeah, I've heard that. I got a few friends who are fathers now, and the rounds per year level has definitely gone down for them. It's a little tricky to get back out there, but I know you got other priorities. So
yeah, I think I've played like two rounds of golf since my son was born, and one of them was on Father's Day. It was like, hey, yeah, you're allowed to go play golf.
So yes, that was the one where you get the pass.
Yeah, for real.
That and Saturdays in the fall when UGA is playing. I'm looking forward to following on Twitter. It's always a great time of the year when you're following Brooks on Saturdays in the fall. Looking forward to the coverage, and go Dawgs.
Appreciate it, brother.
Welcome back. Great to hear Brooks giving us the breakdown on college football.
Yes.
As a current resident of Georgia, great to hear that he's, you know, still all in on UGA. I'm disappointed there was no talk about Georgia Southern University, one of the least vaccinated football teams in the country here. You know, they are certainly going to go nowhere this season.
You know, they had a great moment in the sun a few years ago, if you remember. I think it was the 2019 season or something like that, or 2018.
Yeah, something like that.
Where they had like a 10-11 win season, but things have not been so great since, unfortunately, for your Eagles down there.
It, as usually happens, you have a coach have a really good year in a mid-major like that, and then they jump ship and they go somewhere good.
And then everything falls down again. You go back down to the bottom, you're going to climb down. Yep, that's how it works in the small school world. But shout out to Brooks Austin for joining. That Georgia-Clemson matchup this weekend is going to be awesome. Great way to kick things off. And appreciate him setting the stage for college football season. For all the casual fans out there who are just about to start tuning in this Saturday.
Yeah, which is me. I'm pretty casual college football. I don't care. We don't have a team, you know, Quinnipiac didn't have a football team. So
undefeated since 1929, Mike.
Yeah, all the way. I say that to my wife who went to Virginia Tech, and she goes, you guys haven't won a game. And I was like, but we haven't lost either, so we're undefeated.
This is true. It's lame, but it's
facts.
True. Yeah.
It's true. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks, makers of the Toasty Bites. We love them and we love their product. They're great on the go. Great golf snack that I love having every 10th tee of my round. My favorite flavor is almond blueberry recently. They've got the almond dark chocolate sea salt, the newest flavor. They're in golf courses all over the place, but you can find them right now and get them shipped right to your door. Toasty.com/COL. Promo code is COL20 for 20% off. Special week, Mike.
It's your birthday.
We turn the sun. We do another rotation around the sun again. It is birthday week for me, which means I get to just kind of make my schedule and just do all my things. That's really the main nice part. It's really not even about like, oh, I'm going to see all these people and I'm going to go out. No, it's really not. It's just me just like listing off these small little frivolous things that I enjoy doing that my wife has to join me for. So that might be lots of freebies.
How is that different from the rest of the year?
Yeah, I know. It's really not that different. It's just me spending more time at the driving range. Maybe Wednesday as I celebrate. We'll be getting 18 holes in this week. A couple of dinners for sure. I'll document a Top Golf visit sometime this week and head to BJ so I can get my free Pizookie, my favorite little skillet dessert. Oh, so good, Mike. I can't wait for the birthday freebie dessert. A classic moment in my year. But yeah, another trip around the sun for me this year.
I'm happy for you. Welcome to middle age.
I made it deep into the mid-30s, as we say in my circle. Deep into the mid-30s. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you up to these days?
I had a pretty busy week baking this past week.
No way.
Friday.
You?
I had three things come out of my oven on Friday. It was an awfully busy day. I had hamburger buns come out of the oven so that I could for hamburgers during the weekend. So we had homemade hamburger buns. I made muffins for my store team where I work. I made the muffins. Wow,
so you were the muffin man for them? What kind of muffins?
I was the muffin. I made chocolate chip muffins.
Oh, nice. That's a trencher.
They were okay. They were nothing spectacular or anything, but they were still good. Nice. They're still good. Yeah. You put chocolate in something and it makes it good.
What was item number three?
And then I made brownies as well.
Nice. You really ran the gamut there. Good work.
And everything was pretty easy, but it was just a lot. It was literally like one thing after the other going into the oven. I don't think the oven really turned off all day. So.
Love that. Hit us up on social media if you want Mike to sell and ship you some desserts. You're going to have to pay top dollar, but we're welcome to business ideas and inquiries from anyone who's interested in working together.
I'm looking for angel investors. You just hit me up.
That's right. Hit us up indeed. That's a wrap on this week's Course of Life podcast. We'll see you over at Always End with Food Pod and COL Podcast on Instagram. Everyone have a good week.